This is Courtney Gray, Life and Body Coach. It is my pleasure to welcome you to another episode of the Road to Rediscovery podcast with Aubrey Johnson. Happy listening.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can get this show anywhere you listen to your podcast, worldwide. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Additionally, if you'd rather watch the podcast over hearing the podcast, you can go to our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. We'll make sure and put the link to the YouTube channel in the episode show notes and hit that notification bell so that you can receive weekly alerts every Thursday when our episodes drop. If you listen on any other platform, we still invite your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Just shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. My special guest is, like myself, a North Dallas resident, specifically from Frisco, Texas. Over the course of her 16-plus years, she's hiked and backpacked over 1,000 miles at over 25 national parks here in the U.S. She completed the Tour de Mont Blanc, a renowned hiking trail spanning 170 kilometers in ascent and descent across France, Italy, and Switzerland. She's a passionate nature conservationist, and her efforts are capturing the attention of the Biden administration and the Department of Interior. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Sanvi Sita Mailavarpu. It's so great to have you on the show. My apologies. Thank you for so much for coming on the show. And I'm really, really excited to hear about your journey, your experiences, and your discoveries that you've had ever since you decided to take your first steps in the purpose of hiking. First off, thanks again. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and I'm glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. We are equally glad to have you here. And so how old were you when you first started hiking?
Yeah, so I was about 6 years old when I first started hiking. So yeah. I remember that we were on a family road trip and my parents were figuring out ways that me and my brother could become tired so we wouldn't complain during the car ride. So they thought the best way to tire us out a little and make us run around would go to a national park. And we were going through Kentucky and Tennessee, so we decided to stop at Mammoth Caves National Park.
Yeah.
And when we first went to Mammoth Caves National Park, I didn't really think anything of it. It was hot outside. I wanted to be on my iPad in my car. But my mom really fell in love with the outdoors there, and so did my dad. And that passion made my mom bring my family out into the outdoors even more. So even though my first time out in nature wasn't anything, you know, super inspirational, I didn't feel an automatic connection. I think the gradual connection I felt as I started visiting more national parks and then as I started spending more time outside, that's how I really fell in love with the outdoors.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. So like all children, right? I mean, they, especially in this day and age, you know, with technology, wanting to be on their electronics, but getting fresh air, as your parents know, really, really, you know, energizes a child. It causes their children to use so much energy, right? And you know, kids are energetic anyway. They have to have some place to expel it, to spend that energy, you know. And I'm familiar with Mammoth Cave for sure. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and have made many trips to Kentucky and Tennessee. And so Mammoth Cave's absolutely beautiful. I know at the time you weren't thinking much of it at the time, but it seems like you've grown attached to not just Mammoth Cave, but grown attached to the experience of getting out and hiking for sure. What became one of your first early fascinations with nature when you started these hikes from 6 years old?
I think it was the fact that when I went outside, I just had time to myself. I had time to think. It was time away from school. It was time away from my friends. It was time away from all the distractions in our normal lives, you know, our phones, our emails, our homework, especially for me. It was time away for all of that. It was time for me to think about myself, for self-introspection, for me to grow, for me to think, you know, just about my future, my plans, what I wanted to do the next year, what I wanted to do right now, what I'm thinking about is where I want to go to college, what I want to do for my job. So thinking about all those important things, I find that I think best when I'm outdoors in nature. And the biggest part I would say for my family was just the family bonding. I think especially when I'm at home, my brother and I, my brother's 2 years older than me, we're both very busy. So we don't really get to hang out with each other a lot. And especially when we were younger, we used to fight a lot. So just spending time outdoors with him was one of the best experiences I could have had, because it was just me and him. We didn't have our phones, we didn't have our friends. We were kind of forced in proximity to be with each other, and forging that bond with him and forging that bond with my parents, just being outdoors for days and weeks at a time. And also, I would say the best thing is just connecting with the environment. I think when you spend time outdoors, you organically connect with the environment in a way that you become so accustomed to the environment and you realize that the benefits that you get from the environment. And when you become environmentally conscious like that, you're more likely to actually reduce your carbon footprint. So when I came home and when I spent so much time outdoors, I actually found myself becoming more sustainable innately without me even thinking about it sometimes. And I think that's so important for everyone to be at least a little bit environmentally conscious, especially in this day and age. And I think if we're able to build that organic benefit and those organic connections with nature at a young age, then kids could also benefit the same way I did, with their serotonin levels being boosted, their dopamine levels being boosted, their mood being happier, them also thinking better cognitively. There's so many benefits for the outdoors, and the best way to gauge any of those benefits are to simply just spend time outdoors, whether it's going to a national park, which I know many people aren't able to do, or simply just going for a walk outside with your dog, or going for a walk with your family, or visiting your local nature preserve. I think there's so many ways to forge a bond with the outdoors, whether it is, you know, at one of our amazing national parks or whether it's in your backyard with your family.
Yeah, no, that makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I love the, just the natural virtues that you have shared with us in growing up, spending that time with your brother, you know, and your family, your parents outdoors together, no electronics, right? You get to see and talk and feel and interact with each other and interact with nature, which are all just so virtuous, right? I mean, and it's so beyond just some of the areas that technology has transcended us over time, you know, where people are starting to lose touch with just the very essence of nature and being out and being one with nature. Now, I have to say, and maybe this is just an observation on my part, and I may be incorrect, but keep me honest here. I feel you have quite a mature outlook for your age on the just the true virtues of being in nature and hiking, and not being so consumed by electronics and by social media. And it, to me, it seems like a mature outlook in comparison to I guess, today's average teenager, you know? And so how can one, maybe such as yourself, kind of help foster and advocate for more mature outlooks among your peers, or say even those younger than you?
Yeah, so I think the reason that I've been able to form this outlook is because of the lessons that spending time outdoors has taught me. I think nature is one of the greatest teachers because there's so much knowledge within nature, and the only way to get any of that knowledge is to spend time outdoors. And the survivor skills I've learned and the skills I've just learned from being outdoors, from pitching my own tent, to cleaning up about after myself, to making my own food, to filtering my own water, these kind of things, they teach you a lot of lessons, even though it might not seem like that at the moment. They do end up formulating your personality and helping you become a better human. And I think the best way to encourage more teens to get outdoors and to encourage more kids to get outdoors is to create engaging spaces for them to be able to do that, which is what I'm working on right now with a project called Nature Worthy, where we're getting kids who are not able to spend time outdoors because of various reasons. Either they've just not been exposed to the outdoors like I have, or they don't have the green spaces around them, because there are a lot of environmentally disadvantaged areas in the United States, especially in urban areas. And so we're trying to get more of those kids outdoors. And I found the best way to keep them engaged and to get more kids outdoors is to create exciting events, whether that is going kayaking or going on a really fun group hike, or making a scavenger hunt outside, or creating seed balls and throwing them out to birds, just finding various ways to keep kids engaged. I also think that really involving kids in different parts of nature, like how our food is grown, is really important as well. I think the beauty of, you know, growing your own food and eating it is amazing. I know how I felt when I grew my first zucchini and I ate it, and I knew that I put all this labor and love into the zucchini, and now I'm the one who, you know, gets to harvest it and gets to eat it. And so that's what I'm trying to encourage kids to do as well. So I've been starting pollinator gardens and educational gardens for kids to be involved themselves, and, you know, helping pollinators reemerge and being able to see the fruits of their own labor. And that's a great way to get connected to the outdoors as well. And I think these days, since we have so much technology, it's so easy to get distracted and find other ways to engage yourselves. And I think the most important part is to really create opportunities for youth in the outdoors, and create exciting and energizing opportunities, because once they get connected to nature, then there's no need to create those sorts of opportunities. They themselves will be motivated to go outdoors themselves.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, it's just a matter of getting them connected with nature, right? And creating that space. Would it be safe to say that you're in a very unique position, to where, to me, it seems like the beauty of nature is, and the beauty of outdoors is, a lot of what you're creating in that space to keep them engaged is there. It's there. You just have to kind of organize and put things together, you know. Like, I mean, the nature is there, the plants are there, the dirt is there, you know, the seeds are there, the water is there, you know, and even spaces for setting up a tent or making a fire, you know, learning how to make a fire, right? All those elements are there. It's just a matter of putting them together and getting people engaged in them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't really take a lot for someone to create an exciting nature or outdoor event. I think it's just bringing everyone together, having a good time, and planning, you know, a hike, or, you know, going canoeing, going kayaking, going rafting, or even just swimming. I think there's so many ways to connect with nature that people might not think about. I think even going outside, standing outside for 5 minutes a day,
yeah,
breathing in fresh air, you know, feeling the sun. I mean, in Dallas, it's really hot, so you're always feeling the sunlight, but, you know,
right.
just feeling the light and just looking at the sky, hearing the birds, just taking 5 minutes to just sit outside and really just hear the elements around you. I think that can make a huge difference in one's life. I think there's a reason why people, you know, whenever someone's stressed, someone will say, go outside, get a breath of fresh air, because fresh air really does help. And I think it's time that even in schools or even in workplaces, or even if you're at home, you just take 5 minutes every day or 10 minutes every day, however long you can, or even 2 minutes every day to just go outside, take a breath of fresh air and just really take in your surroundings and elements.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, whether it's 1 minute, 2 minute, it could just, you know, walk outside your front door, right, for 2 minutes and turn around and walk back in. It reminds me, you know, about 4 years ago at the height of the pandemic, everyone was shelter in place, right? And I personally was working from home. I still work from home like 3 days a week still, but I was working from home, you know, 5 days a week at that time. And I was tired of being in my office sitting down, you know? And so, you know, just taking a few steps out in the backyard or the front yard just to, you know, just to breathe in the fresh air. I mean, it was as simple as that sounds. It truly, truly made a difference and refreshed my mindset and refreshed, you know, just my body to where I could, you know, continue and sustain, you know, instead of just droning for hours and hours sitting down, you know. Sanvi, I have to say, this project that you're working on is it sounds rather fascinating. And excuse me for one sec. Excuse me. It sounds rather fascinating. And the reason why I say that is because when you talk about getting people re-engaged, reconnected, and rediscovering, you know, nature, okay, that helps, that really benefits that person in their way of thinking, and helps them, you know, possibly learn new life skills, basic life skills, help shape them into you know, a better human being, or a more in tune or a knowledgeable human being, you know, and all that is great, you know, but it also has an element where you're connecting people, because in a lot of these things you're talking about, people have to work as teams. Is that accurate? Whether you work as teams when it comes to setting up a campsite, or work as teams when it comes to I don't know, fishing, or planting a garden, you know, there's some interactivity and teamwork there that kind of cultivates that experience too.
Yes, completely. So a lot of parts of camping or the various experiences that we create have to do with teamwork and team building. And that's one of many of the lessons that we want people to get out of spending time with the outdoors. And this is one of the many life lessons that we want people to learn and people to connect. And that's one way that people will also connect with nature as well. And so some things that we like to do is building gardens. If you want to build the garden, it takes, especially something like a school garden or a community garden, it doesn't just take one pair of hands. It takes multiple pairs of hands. And it takes, you know, many people coming together from all aspects of the community to come and build that garden. Or when you're pitching a tent, it's not just me pitching the tent. It's my entire family pitching the tent when we're hiking or backpacking. And whenever, you know, you are making food, it takes multiple people. It takes, you know, I mean, if you're there by yourself, you can do it by yourself. But if you're with multiple people, then multiple people will, you know, engage and do it together. So I think being outside is very collaborative, especially when I think the biggest aspect I like about hiking is the camaraderie and the friendships you make. I think when you're hiking on a hiking trail in some random national park and you don't know anyone there, it's not even the state you live in, and you pass by someone, everyone says, hello, how are you? And it's a very friendly situation. And especially when you're backpacking, you'll talk to the people in the campsites next to you, and you'll find out where they live. You'll exchange phone numbers. And I'm still in touch with people that I met on a backpacking trail when I was 10 years old. So These are relationships that you can cultivate over a lifetime. And sure, I'm still in touch with someone who I, you know, my tent was next to their tent for one night out of my entire life. And just the conversations you have when you don't have your phone around you, when you don't have anything else except to talk and just spend time outdoors, the conversations you have and the connections you cultivate, you know, can last lifetimes. And I think I'm an example of that. I'm still in touch with people who I met when I was 10 or 11 years old. And I think that's one of the best things about spending time outdoors.
That's absolutely amazing. And yes, you have that time to interact and it's real, right? They see when you're talking with them, they see you, they hear you, they see your expressions, they feel your expressions, they receive your expressions, and it can't be lost in translation like dry text over a phone, right? So the text, it can be interpreted one way or another. I mean, you know, but when you're sitting there talking and looking at the person, you know, you're truly, truly receiving what they're saying and vice versa. So I want to thank you for sharing those examples of how camaraderie and teamwork can all come together, as well as interactivity during those times you're not working together, like right before you go to bed. You know, you're in your sleeping bags and you're talking. That's fantastic. Now, Sanvi, another area, I guess, that would be a benefit when it comes to people connecting with nature and hiking is observations, discoveries and observations that one would have. I would think after hiking for so long and after camping for so long and doing different nature activities for so long, you start to discover with a more trained eye some areas and opportunities in which nature, in which more can be done to conserve nature. And it's a bit bittersweet because we always wish it would be in a better condition than what you observe, but it is an opportunity for you to observe that need for conservation. Can you share with us maybe one of your earlier experiences when you have started to observe in your hikes, in your excursions, your campings, and so forth, some part of the earth, some part of the land, the structure, the condition of the forest, whatever it may be, that you started to see, wow, you know, we need to do a better job conserving nature?
Yeah, so I would say it was when I visited Glacier National Park. I don't remember at what age I visited, but it was definitely more than 7 years ago.
Okay.
And so 6 to 7 years ago. And I remember I loved the national park. I loved the hikes. We saw, I think, some sort of goat up there. And I was so amazed. There were so many cool animals. And I remember going to the visitor center and learning about these glaciers. And a lot of the rangers in the visitor center were telling me that, oh, these glaciers might melt by this time, by this certain time, by 20 something, something, you know, these glaciers are going to be completely melted. And they were telling me, oh yeah, this glacier in 19, you know, something was this high and now it's melted all the way down to here. In the future, me and my dad were actually talking about it. We were thinking, in the future, will they still keep the name Glacier National Park if there's not going to be any glaciers left?
Right.
And so that really hit me really hard, because that was one of the first times where I saw a part of nature and I was thinking, when I come back, when I'm older with my children, they might not be able to experience this national park the same exact way I experienced it.
Yes.
It might not be there anymore. And that's when the impact of global warming and climate change really hit me, because earlier it had never personally affected me. Climate change, global warming, I've never personally felt any effects of this issue. And this was one of the first times where I felt the effect of this issue, because I knew that what I was experiencing was a once in a lifetime experience, Whereas in other national parks, I could go back and it would be the exact same like 5 years later. But Glacier National right. Park, I could go back and it was going to be different. And right. so that's when I first really started digesting the impact and how vast this issue was. And over the years, as I really thought about this issue, I kind of came to a conclusion about it, which is that in the earlier days, people used to be so connected with nature. You know, people used to be building houses. Children used to be outdoors all the time, especially starting with my parents. When my parents were younger, they used to be outdoors all the time. They were more connected with nature. Even before that, you know, people depended on nature for their survival, whether that would be hunting or whether that would be chopping down their own wood for their houses. People depended on nature. And that's when we saw nature was healthy and people were living in harmony with nature. But as we slowly started to stop depending on nature so much, and although we still depend on it, we're not directly, you know, cutting down our own trees for our houses. We're not directly doing that. As we stopped connecting with the outdoors, we've also seen an increase in global warming and climate change issues and environmental issues. So I started to realize that when mankind disconnected with nature, that's when we started seeing all these issues arising. Mm. And I think the best way that we can encourage the next generation to not make the same mistakes that our current generations are making with sustainability is to simply just encourage the next generation to spend time outdoors, expose youth to the outdoors at a young age, mm-hmm. and really connect them with the outdoors. Because if they themselves feel that connection with the outdoors, they themselves will be sustainable. And there'll be no need to, you know, push sustainability or protest for sustainability when the generation themselves is sustainable and has that sustainable mindset because they've formed that bond with nature themselves.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And yes, they do form that bond with nature themselves. I'm glad you mentioned it and put it in that context, Sanvi, because for so long, I've always asked hypothetically, or rhetorically, I'm sorry, asked, generations, we've done so much over the years, over generations, over decades, in kind of disconnecting with nature. And like you said, that's when the global warming and all this stuff started to happen. And it's like, we don't want to leave future generations with the responsibility of undoing what we did. You know, but you're saying the sustainability is where they connect with nature and they, you know, the younger generations themselves, they connect with nature and they do what they feel in their hearts to be with nature and to, I guess, nurture nature and not be so heads down focused on undoing what was done.
Yeah. So I think nature is shown to help you creatively and cognitively.
Yeah.
I think when you're connected to nature and you already have that sustainable mindset, it'll be easier for you to come up with creative, sustainable solutions.
Yes.
So I think by connecting the next generation with nature, we're already helping them have that creative mindset. And if they have that creative, sustainable mindset, then it'll be easier for them to come up with sustainable solutions, maybe alternatives to plastic that are easier to develop and produce, maybe more ways to get renewable resources out to people all over the world. So just coming up with ideas like that, I think it'll be much easier and much more enforceable if we first build that bond with nature, because I think that's where it all starts.
I see. So Sanvi, do you feel that gradually newer generations or younger generations are starting to, I don't want to say realize the urgency, but to recognize, I guess, the importance of nature and make an effort to connect with it?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, I'm not really sure about, you know, Gen Alpha, but I think in Gen Z, I think I know a lot of my peers who are working towards the same thing I am, to children to spend time outdoors and to get kids outdoors. Mm-hmm. And I think that's extremely important. Everyone has their own place and everyone has their own way of bettering the planet. And my way is to make sure that other kids get to experience the same benefits from nature that I did, especially in the United States. I always had this perception that since we have national parks and since we have so many green spaces and since we're not as polluted as many of the other countries in the world, that it should be so easy for kids to spend time outdoors. But as I've gone more into advocacy and more into working on getting kids outdoors, I've realized that there's so many environmentally disadvantaged areas in the United States that a lot of people don't even think about. And I think my place right now is to get kids outdoors and encourage kids to spend time outdoors and get those kids who don't have areas or green spaces around their homes to get them outdoors in various ways and just connect children to the outdoors overall.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And yeah, there's a lot of younger generations and children and teenagers in let's say urban environments, right? That don't have green spaces to connect with, right? And so being able to create that space for them is to me it's an incredible opportunity. And it shows your potential to exponentially make a change and make a difference, not just for nature, but for those individuals who are impacted by you, by your influence. I mean, this is really fascinating. And I'm not just saying this, Sanvi. This is really fascinating. Now, I know we talked about roughly the global warming. We kind of alluded to it. So I'm wondering, you know, over the past 10 years, I personally have observed and noticed more and more reports and stories on just raging forest fires. And it's so weird because it seems like in one part of the country where we have raging forest fires, there's another part of the country, really not that far away, that are suffering through flooding and mudslides, you know? And so I guess my question is, over a long span or a long-term period of time, you know, with everyone doing their part to conserve and doing their part to just preserve nature, could we see a change or a reduction in forest fires or a reduction in the mudslides and floods? Or is it too far gone based on, you know, just human action and global warming? You know, I hope that makes sense what I'm asking.
Yeah, it does. So I do not think we're too far gone at all. I think what we have to do now, there's no going back. We can't, you know, try to undo things, but
that's right. We
can try to move forward in a sustainable way. And obviously, human development's always going to depend on fossil fuels. You know, there's no way to wean off fossil fuels super fast. That's not going to happen because billions of people all over the world rely on fossil fuels. And if we take that away really fast, it's going to cause issues for them too. And it's going to leave people in poverty and people starving. So I think what we need to do is connect youth with the outdoors and move forward in the most sustainable way we can. So cut back on things you can. If you can't cut back on things, then don't. But try your best in each and every household. Do whatever you can. And I think just everyone doing their part, whether that's small or big, you know, we might have a smaller part to play in our own households rather than, you know, a CEO of a company who's, you know, using fossil fuels every single day for his company. But everyone has a part to play. And I think if everyone plays their part, you know, if we play our part as homeowners and as just normal everyday citizens, and other people play their part as what, you know, the president of the United States or the, you know, CEO of a company, and everyone plays their part on trying to be as sustainable as possible, I think we'll see a change.
I must say, Sanvi, your outlook and your practical approach in how you articulate each person doing their part is very, very refreshing. You know, everyone is, we're all breathing the same air. We're all living on the same earth, planet, but we all have different lives. And so, you know, different people can contribute in different ways and different amounts. You know, it's not so cookie cutter for everyone. And so the way you articulate it to, you know, to for us to find ways in which we can, and it's not so prescripted to do X, Y, Z, you know, whether you have the resources or not, it's refreshing and it's encouraging for people to say, well, you know, no one's going down my throat saying I must do this, this, and this, this. But if any way I can contribute, you know, that's more inviting I guess what I'm saying, you know. So I appreciate that refreshing approach. I appreciate the practicality of it. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, when it comes to hiking and camping and just all the different things with outdoors, just like everything else, there's risks that come with it, right? So how do you stay mindful of those risks in order to plan and protect yourself and those who are within your program, you know, but still enjoy the beauty of nature, landforms, elevations, wildlife, and more?
Yeah, I think anything you're doing, you have to be careful. So obviously we'll check the weather beforehand. If the weather's not cooperating, then we just won't go. Right. A lot of times I have hiked through hail. I've hiked through rain. I've hiked through a lot of nasty weather. But yeah. I would say that if you can hike through the weather, hike through it. If you can't, they'll probably shut the trail down. But if they don't, then make the best decision you think is possible. I think everything in life has risks. I think every time we get in the car, you know, there's a chance we could get in a car crash. So I think just making calculated risks, calculated choices, and knowing what risks are out there, and making the best decision for yourself is what you should do. But I think when it comes to the outdoors, it's not as risky as people think. I would say that I've been hiking on pretty steep, you know, ledges and stuff since I was really young. And I think if you're paying attention to your hike, and if, you know, you're trying to be mindful of where you are and know that you're on a ledge, I think you'll be fine. Yeah, I think especially when we're trying to get kids outdoors, we obviously don't put them in dangerous situations. We're not going to be hiking right on the ledge, but right, just making sure that you're staying safe, that, you know, you have your head count, and you're making sure that you're doing all you can. You have bear spray, you know, you have all the gear, bear spray, water purifiers. You have ways to get in touch with emergency if you need to, and just having all of those, I think you should just have fun, focus on the hike, and you'll be fine.
Fantastic. So you heard it here, everyone. It's not as dangerous as some people think. As long as you have all the precautions necessary, whether it's bear spray, whether it's first aid kits, right?
Yes.
Those are very important. But please, please, please don't let these things deter you from connecting with nature, going out and being one with nature, as they say, and just taking in that fresh air, learning a new skill, an outdoor skill. Maybe it's a life skill that older generations needed to know how to do just to survive. And now this is a skill that, you know, we have technology that does something in place of it, but you have the skill to do it just as if you lived in the 1800s. So that is absolutely tremendous. It's a life skill. It's a hand skill. It's something no one can take away from you. And again, don't let the risks, because there's risks in everything, to your point, Sanvi, don't let the risks deter you from connecting with nature. So Sanvi, how can the listeners follow and connect more with you and learn more about your journeys and more about your recommendations and suggestions for conserving?
Yeah, so my Instagram is chalkbags N10s with an N instead of an. Okay. And so that's where I post hiking stories. I'll post videos on conservation and little things that you can do around your home to conserve, whether that's not wasting food or saving a bit of water every day, conserving water, little things you can do in your everyday life that can make you more sustainable, but are also practical because as much as we would love to be fully sustainable, you know, it might be easier for people who are, I am mindful that it might be easier for people who are more privileged to be able to go and get these sustainable goods, to get these right. things that are marketed as being sustainable. And it might be easier for people who are, you know, not as privileged and don't have as many resources to just buy something that's plastic. And I completely understand that. And I think, you know, plastic is one of the greatest inventions of mankind. But we just need to learn how to use it properly and how to dispose of it properly. And if we have an opportunity to buy sustainable. And so just, I talk about that a lot on my Instagram. There's little things that you can do in your everyday life to be sustainable, to spend time outdoors. And I post about my hiking stories as well. So you'll see a lot of pictures of my hiking and just inspiring you to spend time outdoors as well.
That is extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary, Sanvi. And we are going to have, we're going to have a link to your blog, to your the space with your hiking stories, as well as suggestive ideas on how to reduce waste and how to conserve and how to support and nurture nature. We're going to have links to all that information that you provide in the episode show notes so people can connect with it, click the link, learn more about it while listening to this wonderful, wonderful conversation. Sanvi Sita Mailavarpu.
Yes.
I got it.
Perfect. Yes.
Trust me, it's been in my head the whole time. I wanted to do right by you and pronounce it properly. I can't thank you enough for coming onto the show, sharing your insights when it comes to nature, hiking, connecting with nature, and suggestions on how we can conserve. And the practical approach and outlook that you have is it's immeasurable. So, Sanvi, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, likewise. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, you're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. Please share this show. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.